Hello all and welcome to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, your host, joined as always on Fridays by Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
You know, it's one of those days, John, where so much is happening, but I'm trying to keep it together. A huge dance card for later on today that will take us into the evening hours. I'm really excited.
A dance card?
You know, my dance card is full. I've got this, we got new things happening, we've got Game Busters later on. We're gonna play some Jackbox games. Nice. You know, there's a lot on the docket.
Okay, I've heard of dockets. I've never heard of a dance card.
Well, you obviously didn't attend many promenades in the early 20s.
I guess I did. Not invited to many proms, not invited to many DC area sexual get togethers, I guess. I'm not getting invited to pretty much anything these days. But I am glad to have you here. We invited you and you showed up, and that's important for a couple different reasons. First of all, because over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we're gonna be going through, you know, I gotta stop saying that, because on the podcast, they'll then think that it's 90 minutes, but it's not. Through the course of the rest of the show, we're gonna be talking about a lot of different stuff, including some fascinating and potentially worrying developments in Ukraine. We've got the House actually getting off their asses and doing something, so that's fun. Donald Trump acknowledges supporters from Gays for Trump. You know, that's gonna be a debacle. We've got some police brutality, we got a lot of stuff. And so I'm excited to have you there for that. But also, I need an extra pair of hands to take out the garbage people of the week. I got a fun one. I was able to make it kind of environmental, actually, which is fun. And I'm excited to find out who yours is, Brett. But while we do have a lot to talk about, and definitely get in there, hit the like button while the hit the like buttoning is good. We also want to acknowledge first, this happened right before the show, so we don't have a prepared thing. And I actually kind of talked about it on the pre-show, which we do every day on YouTube before the full show. Amazon workers, historic, like generational win in unionizing a Staten Island warehouse. So it's the first union that's ever been organized at an Amazon facility. The workers in Bessemer got close. They're doing another vote soon, so that'll be coming. And we knew coming into today that the vote was looking good, but they wrapped it up pretty quickly this morning, and so the unionization has happened. I saw I didn't see the quote attributed, but at one of the like sort of celebrations, one of the workers was quoted as saying, "I'd like to thank Bezos for going to space, because while he was up there, we were down here organizing a union." So, and of course, we know that they spent like over $4 million over the last year specifically lobbying to stop unionization. So, pretty big win, Brett.
Very big win. I'm very proud of them. That is exactly the case where you should have unions, and the fact that we don't. If you warped back to like the 1970s and told people that bigger companies than General Motors that operate on a larger scale within the United States wouldn't be unionized in their warehouses, they would ask what other apocalyptic events happened. And then anyone who goes and complains to you that this might raise prices elsewhere, it's like, well, the cost of living wasn't getting any more affordable anyway. Because while, you know, basically people weren't getting, the amount of money consolidated in the hands of the wealthy was going up, 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 but relative to just a pretty manageable inflation, the income for workers on this scale was going down, 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 or staying the same, which might as well be going down, down, down.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And look, we don't know how Amazon is gonna respond. I'm going to assume not well. Some people are talking in the chat about, does this mean they're gonna shut down the factory or the warehouse, I should say. I imagine not. It employs 5,000 people. That seems like an pretty important part of their infrastructure there. And they have to be looking around the country and seeing the trend. Shutting down one warehouse, I assume, isn't gonna stop this. But it's understandable that people are worried about how a massive corporation like this that has operated under a philosophy of no holds barred and fighting against unionization, God only knows what they would do. And we know, by the way, grocery store chains here in Southern California have shut down multiple stores for similar sorts of things. So it's not impossible, but we're gonna see how they'll respond and how other workers at Amazon and other massive corporations will respond. We've already had a lot of great both strikes over the past year, as well as Starbucks stores unionizing. So yeah, and look, people are pointing out that Walmart has shut down stores for trying to unionize. We'll see. It's a very high profile thing. There would be more cost than there has been in the past for that sort of action. but we will have to wait and see as this develops. Anyway, with that said, we do have a lot more to talk about. So everyone, I'm going to need you to buckle up and hold on to your butts as we launch into all of this. And if you want to send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we love it when you do, and we will respond as we go. But Brett, are you ready for this thing?
Sure.
Okay, that sounds good. A simple answer, I guess, to a simple question. Let's start off with this. Now, what you just saw was footage of an oil facility burning and footage of helicopters. We can't say for sure that we know exactly what is happening in those videos, but we do know what they're alleged to be about. And you might think, well, that's all very typical. Russia invaded Ukraine. There's been any number of different strikes. But the thing that is very notable about this is that was not footage, if you believe it, from inside of Ukraine. That was outside of the Ukrainian borders. In fact, a Russian politician wrote on Telegram that two Ukrainian helicopters launched an airstrike on a depot in the Russian city of Belgorod, located 24 miles north of the Ukrainian border. So if this is what they are saying it is, inside of Russia and giving sort of cagey answers on the Ukrainian side, but we're gonna go through all of it. This would be the first time that the Ukrainian military has struck back against Russia outside of their own borders. So one of these videos was posted by a semi-official Ukrainian military account with the caption, "Ukrainian aviation at work in Belgorod." So I don't consider that confirmation, especially because a representative for Ukraine's army earlier told a newspaper that the attack could be a false flag operation to justify further violence against Ukrainians, which is not difficult to imagine, Brett. But I don't know, like, we can't trust the Russian politicians saying that it happened. Ukraine has, I could understand reasons why they would want to claim it and reasons why they wouldn't want to claim it. It's not impossible that it could be a false flag. It's one facility, a little bit of footage of helicopters. What do you think?
Reporting live from the fog of war is everyone not caring what actually happened, is my take on what's happened. No, obviously you care. And this is definitely one of those, it's more of a diagnostic situation. For all intents and purposes, than anything I can report on with confidence personally, and I'll only speak for myself. So let's break it down. There's a lot of people who are going to say this is not a false flag operation, who will then claim wild other things are false flag operations with just the same amount of evidence. Aside from that, it is hilarious if Russia gets mad at a country for invading it. Like, if this is a strike from the Ukrainians on the Russians, and the Russians are mad because there has been a military strike on their soil, to complain too much about that would be just a huge demonstration of a lack of self-awareness. I think that is hilarious, because in the meantime, they're invading another country, and pretending it's otherwise is disingenuous and cynical.
Yeah, 100%. I expect that will be their approach. Non-consistent though it might be, it's very much, it's the international equivalent of the, like, what does Cenk always say about the time he was wrestling the guy? The guy attacked
Mr. Jamaica.
Him, and then, no, not that. And then he was like, why are you hitting me? Why are you hitting me? Well, you were on top of me. I get to hit back at some point. And I wish that we could say for sure. I mean, we have to be aware of so many potential biases, not only the biases that the Russian sources for information or the Ukrainian sources for information, official or unofficial, might have, but also our own biases. Because we might be biased to think that, okay, we've heard about potential false flags, so this fits into that narrative. And we might be biased to think that. Or we might think, well, we know that Ukraine has been pushing back Russian forces. We're in fact gonna get into that in just a minute. So this kind of fits into that narrative. So maybe I buy it for that reason. Or just emotionally, you might like the idea that Ukraine is finally striking back. But none of those predispositions, I guess I would call them, have anything to do about the facts about whether this actually happened. And we unfortunately are having to rely on unreliable information to the extent that information is available at all. It is possible by the time you're watching this clip on YouTube or listening to the podcast that this has been confirmed one way or the other. But we're just giving you our initial reactions to something that is, if it is what they say it is, or honestly, even if it's not, it is an escalation. It's an escalation if it's true. It's also an escalation if it's a false flag. We have no idea. So we will have to wait and see. What we do know though, is that Ukraine has been continuing to push back Russian forces. Russian forces are saying that they're pulling out of certain areas. That has been semi-true based on the evidence that's been presented to us. Some of the cities they said they would be lowering the scale of their attacks on are still being struck on a regular basis. But we do know that in recent days, Ukraine has recaptured a number of towns and cities, as well as the Chernobyl nuclear plant actually, which they had to flee from what feels like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. They have now actually reclaimed. And a US official says that there's an airfield not far from Kyiv that they've also retaken. And some of this, there's at least a little bit more evidence for. For instance, one of the main social media accounts for the Ministry of Defense for Ukraine said in response to Chernobyl, Russian occupiers left Chernobyl nuclear power plant. Two key reasons, losses caused by Ukrainian army and radiation exposure. Russian mutants lost this round of Stalker. That is, if you're not familiar with it, a video game that is sort of a sci-fi situation that developed in the area around Chernobyl. And so it's a weird thing for the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense to reference and referring to them as mutants is, I get it, it's a good own. But that area, if it is experiencing radiation exposure, is gonna be a problem for people other than just the Russian military. And we'll get into some of that, but Brett, what do you think?
This is what happens when you step into like across the cultural divide from my personal perspective. It's like, whoa, the Ukrainians and the Russians hate each other. This is how they talk to each other. It gets real weird. There's probably a lot of inside like non-jokes, but inside disses. And I don't want to pick a fight with a Ukrainian or a Russian typically. But like when they're being like, listen, mutants, get away from this our nuclear power plant fallout area. It's like, all right, fine. And it's so weird, right? At a backdrop of like humanitarian disaster.
Yeah.
It is very, you know, I've made multiple videos just going through like what's considered fun to do in this part of the world, because the YouTube experience coming out of former Soviet socialist republics is just like gallows humor to the max.
Yeah.
And that actually is playing out from the official defense of Ukraine department.
Exactly.
With a blue check next to it on Twitter. So all my research still holds.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe, you know, God forbid disaster happens to the US. People can start throwing around Fallout references, very popular franchise. Yeah. No, it's a wild situation. And by the way, aside from just, sorry, what was that?
Well, that's just like what there's a divide. Like either you go crazy or you start like, or you get depressed and sad, but it's just insane to me to look at this and be like, okay, so in the official correspondence, exactly, someone said you're a mutant and you lost this game.
Yeah,
and it is very much life and death.
They didn't just make the reference, they literally tagged the social media account for the video game, which is odd. And of course, this is a serious situation. Ukraine's ministry added that the Russian troops looted the power plant, taking kettles, lab equipment, and radiation, which I assume, unless there's a mistranslation, is another own, that they're taking the radiation with them. By the way, the IAEA says that there have been reports of radiation sickness as the withdrawal happened. They said some soldiers are being treated in Belarus for radiation sickness, which can cause symptoms like nausea, vomiting, skin damage, seizures, coma. And according to the Ukrainian state nuclear company, the troops, quote, panicked at the first sign of illness, which showed up very quickly, which I think, look, obviously we hate the invasion. I can sort of understand why you'd panic if you started to experience these very stereotypical radiation sickness symptoms after taking over Chernobyl.
Exactly. And, like it is, it's gotta be, from what we read, the feedback from certain Russian soldiers, understandably, at realizing that this is not what they thought they were in for, has got to be like, this is the worst assignment. They're sitting there comparing, where are you going? I'm going into Ukraine. That's the worst assignment ever. And this one dude looks down and goes like, I'm going to Chernobyl.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that thought that you just expressed might be why apparently a number of troops are refusing to invade Ukraine, according to a lawyer who's representing a group of National Guardsmen who are suing the government. He says nearly 1,000 Russian soldiers have contacted him for legal defense as they try to stop being a part of this. And is that totally independent of yesterday's, or maybe 2 days ago, the big story where Vladimir Putin announced a decree ordering 134,500 new conscripts into the army? It is an annual spring draft. They do these drafts from time to time and says that it has nothing to do with the war in Ukraine. But we know that conscripts have already been sent into Ukraine. So I don't know, I'm not necessarily gonna take Putin's word on it wholly. But anyway, the debacle continues. And again, it's not to say that Russia isn't achieving a number of their objectives, particularly in the eastern portion of Ukraine, or that their objectives might be changing based on the situation on the ground and would continue to if attacks inside of Russia continue. I have a hard time believing that that's gonna become the new thing in this war, but I've been proven wrong a number of times before, Brett, so God only knows.
Yeah, and I don't need to tell a TYT audience to be skeptical of official communiques from military agencies. Just factor it all in, and that's why, because especially in the meantime, everyone's gonna use it to further their own agenda, whether it is significant geopolitically or just in terms of subscriber count. But people are using this. Don't be one of them.
Exactly. That is a direct warning to me, I think. We try to acknowledge our biases and understand them. I want to jump into something very different though. So let's reset for a sec with this bonkers video.
Russia invaded Ukraine last month. The most highly credentialed people in the world seem stunned by it. And that was not very reassuring to the rest of us. Quote, it was a shock to many of the leading experts and policymakers in the United States, Europe, and even Ukraine. So now is the moment to ignore the people who've been consistently wrong and instead listen carefully to the people who've gotten it right in the past, the ones who saw the Ukraine war coming and said so out loud. Those are the people you should be listening to, and one of them is Nigel Farage.
That's a hilarious ending, but his overall point is don't listen to people who got it wrong. They can't be trusted. That's been demonstrated. Instead, listen to people who got it right. Don't listen to people who get it. Don't take advice, for instance, from people who got it wrong. Don't take advice about who to listen to from people who got it wrong. You know where this is going? Like Tucker Carlson, obviously. On the March 3rd edition of the show, in the literal transcript, he says, "We've been taken by surprise by the whole thing." Now, that's fair. I said the same thing. Many people have. He goes on to do a version of what we did, saying we're not the only ones who were, but we are willing to admit it. The only thing more embarrassing than being wrong in your estimates is pretending that you weren't. Well, I would like to do a slight variation on that. One other thing that's really embarrassing is initially not pretending that you weren't, but then like after 3 weeks go by, you look around and say, does anyone remember that I was wrong? Okay, I wasn't wrong. Listen to me, I know what's going on. No, it's perfectly fine to admit that you were surprised. Most people were, because it's a crazy thing to invade a sovereign nation. It was an insane thing. But now he wanted the credit for admitting he was wrong, and now he wants the rep. He wants everyone to trust him. He doesn't want you to trust. Again, it's most of Fox is about stripping away any respect for expertise, any respect for research, analysis, any of that. It's all about trusting pundits. No, that is not how you should live your life. Certainly not about foreign policy.
But you know who said that they was gonna get invaded was Biden. So Tucker just told you to listen to the Biden administration. Next question.
Exactly.
Like, I don't wanna be the person who's
credit.
I don't wanna admit that when it was coming down to the wire on this thing that I was wrong, and I didn't think that Putin would invade. I thought there was a neutrality that was established for the future of Ukraine, and that was it.
Yeah.
And that's why there was saber rattling. I was wrong. You know who was right? And I hate to say it, was the Biden administration, who sounded war drummy, war hawky, gallows. It's, you know, very glass is half empty. Mm-hmm. But I think the only glass we need to be considering right now is handing Tucker Carlson a warm glass of shut up juice.
I appreciate the old reference. By the way, we do care about whether you are right or wrong when you make claims. And the issue is that in the media, all too often, you can say whatever crazy thing you want and people just forget. You might remember, it's ancient history at this point, but try to follow me. There was this theory about biolabs. What, nobody's even talking about that anymore. Isn't that weird? And now some are claiming that they didn't say the things that they did. Take a look at this. Amazing work, by the way, here by Media Matters.
Secret biolabs? Like the secret biolabs Ukraine definitely doesn't have? Not only did the administration fund these secret biolabs in Ukraine, military biological programs are under development in Ukraine financed by the US Defense Ministry. So yes, we're funding secret biolabs in Ukraine. Has there been a relationship between the US Pentagon and a bioweapons facility in Ukraine? Biological weapons, why would Ukraine have bioweapons? We would assume, because you all but said it, that there's a military application to this research, that they were working on bioweapons. We never alleged the United States was making bioweapons. We don't know that. We found out from a separate source the obvious, which is some of these are bioweapons, of course.
So, geez, a lot can happen over the. So, obsessive coverage for a couple of days, believing whatever any random person on a right-wing forum says about bioweapons, and then gleefully reporting it to get people fired up to think that Ukraine is equally morally culpable when it comes to this war. Then 2 weeks later imply that we never implied that we knew anything. We were totally neutral in the whole thing. And then 2 weeks after that, just go back to claiming that it was true. Like just test the weather, test the temperature every day and just make, you know, whatever's popular now. That's what I believe. And if it becomes unpopular, I'll change my view. People need to develop not only critical thinking skills generally, but trying to like have a little bit of kind of like news institutional memory. Remember the things that people focused on and remember whether they gave you caveats at the time or if only in hindsight.
You know how on this show we talk to our audience like they're human beings? On Fox, it's not like that. On Fox, it's always a kid's show or they're talking to people. Like when, you know, you go to visit a retirement home and you're like, hey, Grampy, how are you doing? Are you getting all the juice you want? Are they being good? That is how Fox News talks to its audience from the butt crack of dawn until the end of their primetime lineup.
Yeah.
And what they're banking on is memories that lasts as long as goldfish memories. And it's just like everybody's doing, it's this confirmation bias. They go through and they look for what will benefit them and that's the only truth. Anything that refutes it, either they stop reporting on what they got wrong or they just pretend they never reported on what they got wrong and they move right ahead because apology is weakness, honor truth is weakness. No, that's strength, guys, and you need to practice it more.
100%. Okay, we got tons to talk about, including the House, or at least the Dems in the House for the most part, actually doing something, seeing a problem, proposing a solution. We'll talk about it after this. We've got other people ruining the stuff that's going to be in this block, but first, kind of good news, at least briefly, starting with this video.
This should be a final passage on this bill lowering the cost of insulin for Americans.
On this vote, the yeas are 232, the nays are 193. The bill is passed.
So that right there is an ad by Midas Touch about last night's insulin price cap vote. And I think at the end they go a little bit far with the Democrats save lives. Yeah, in some cases there's a lot more that they could do. But that's the sort of ad that I would love to see being made about things that have actually happened. And I'd love to see more of those things actually happen. What happened yesterday was the Affordable Insulin Now Act, okay? It would take effect in 2023 and it was successfully voted through the House. It would limit cost sharing under private health insurance for a month's supply of certain insulin products at $35. or 25% of a plan's negotiated price, whichever is less. That generally, when it comes to insurance, is not the way that that's worded, but $35 is a lot less than what most people, unfortunately, have to pay for insulin. And a lot of people have to pay for insulin because, according to the CDC, 37.3 million people in the US have diabetes. That's an amazing number. You want a way more amazing number? According to government data, insulin costs about 800% more in the US than in other developed economies. Not 8% more, not 80% more, 8 times as much for the exact same thing. And newer versions of insulin these days can retail for between $175 and $300 a vial. It very much varies for people, but most patients with diabetes need 2 to 3 vials per month. Some require more, each one of those incredibly pricey. And since 2012, list prices of many of these new forms of insulin have risen particularly rapidly, as much as 15% year over year, over year, over year. And so some of this data is even a bit out of date, but the trend is clear. The price continues to skyrocket. One more amazing number for you before we get into the politics of this. The US represents only 15% of the global insulin market, but it generates nearly 50% of the industry's insulin revenue. That is great news for that industry and nobody else in the world. But that industry is who generally is protected by our government. Now, in this case, thankfully, we had it pass. Okay, all of the Democrats voted to cap the price of insulin. 12 Republicans voted as well, and we're going to acknowledge those soon. But when I say that 12 voted for it, that means that all of the rest of the Republicans voted against it. Okay, that means that in a time where prices are skyrocketing and they love to talk about inflation and the rising cost of living, and they point at the Dems and say it's their fault, do they want to do something about it? Do any of the so-called right-wing populists, the new breed of Republicans, that they're not interested in protecting corporations? No, they might disagree with us on social stuff, but they're definitely with us when it comes to cost and everything. No, none of them supported it either. Isn't that weird? It's almost as if right-wing populism is a complete ruse. But anyway, we're gonna get into some responses to this, Brett, but what do you think about this?
There are Republicans who voted against affordable insulin.
They
all don't want it. And so sometimes you get trapped. You get locked into a vote where it is impossible for you to avoid voting a certain way. A byline in the initiative is something that the other side seizes on. No, this is what the debate was about. It was about insulin prices in marijuana. Yeah. Insulin prices. That's what they voted on. And Republicans don't want it. Now, what are they for? If you ask them, they're against government intervention on stuff like this. Kind of let it go, let it do where it is, because this is America, and America yields the best systems and the best results the world over. Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to burst all of their pharma bubbles, but it does not. I've looked at the responses to tweets in this category today, and it's all like, oh, insulin should be free. That's another free thing that no one's going to pay for and we can't afford. It's like, I hate to break it to you, but other countries serve it up for free.
Yeah.
They do pay for it. It's free at the point of getting it, but your taxes pay for it in other systems the same way your taxes pay for the fire department. So you don't have to pay the fire department an exorbitant amount of money. And exactly, in all of those countries that have a system where the hospitals work the same way as the fire department, they pay at least half as much.
Yeah.
They basically pay half as much per person for medical coverage in general, half as much, and they live longer. So our system does not yield better results. It is not a better system. And we need to pivot to one that is better than the one we have.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the end, the people living in those countries, oddly enough, are happier in general terms than people living here, supposedly in the better system. So we get to decide, what sort of representatives do we want? What sort of government do we want? And you have some pretty clear alternatives in this case. You have people like Ilhan Omar, who notably voted to cap the price of insulin, saying House Republicans voting against lowering the cost of insulin, which is a life-saving drug, and it's something every member of the media should be asking them about. Republicans have been hammering Democrats on the rise of prices on things like gas and asking us to do something, but in reality, they really don't want us helping everyday Americans. They love screaming about problems and not coming up with a single solution. They have no agenda. And then on the other side, you have Republicans who who, seeing the skyrocketing cost of insulin, defend the ever increasing profits that the pharma companies are making off insulin with comments like in this video.
Today is the government fixing the price on insulin. What's next? Gas? Food? History tells us that price fixing doesn't work.
Yes. Okay. The thing, though, is we're not talking about whether to have price fixing or not. Someone who is artificially determining the price of a thing. We have that right now. The question is, who is doing the fixing? They've decided, the pharma industry has decided, that they can jack up the price of a fluid 100 times, way more than they do even in other countries. And the government is protecting their ability to do that. A life-saving thing again. This isn't, look, gas is important. If gas prices go up, you don't necessarily die. For people who need insulin, it is very much about their health and perhaps their life. Now that, of course, is all lost because Kathy McMorris Rogers doesn't give a damn about any of this. So who do you want in charge? Do you want Democrats that are going to identify a problem and come up with an actual workable solution? Or do you want people like her? Because on the right, you don't really have much else. I want to bring up this graphic. I went and found, very few people seem to actually care about this. I went and found the actual Republicans who voted in favor because I just wanted to see, is it possible that Madison Cawthorn voted for it? Or Lauren Boebert or Marjorie Greene? They say that they're against the elites. They say it over and over and over again. But oddly enough, they vote exactly like the Republican establishment. And it's important that we bear that in mind.
Yes, and my response to that to Kathy McMorris Rogers is, well, why don't we come up with a better system than what you say is price fixing? And that system is negotiation.
Yeah,
they're against negotiating drug prices. Now, their God King is Donald Trump, who did the art of the deal, who would probably argue to find the best means by which to lower prices through negotiation. And these medications are inelastic goods. It's the economic term, which means that no matter how high the price goes, you will pay it because the demand's not going to change. Like if I don't want Nikes because they get more expensive, I don't need to buy Nikes. But you need to buy insulin or you're going to go into shock and you're going to die or you'll lose a limb. And so you'll pay any price necessary. Now, the only way to combat that is through bulk buying from the government. And so that's what that is the solution that everyone else uses that works, that is the reason other countries pay less in drug prices than we do. And the Republicans are against it because they are for packing the pockets of big pharma.
Exactly. We're going to go from giving the Dems a little bit of credit. And in fact, in our next break, we're going to give them credit on a different thing to regrettably having to take some of it away as we transition to this. How progressive will our Senate allow the Democrats who are in charge to be? Well, you already kind of have an idea based on the experience of last year, but less than even under the Obama administration. We have a very specific case of this. And this involves David Weil, who wanted to be the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division, had been nominated for that position, has already served in that exact position under the Barack Obama administration. But apparently, he turned out to be just too progressive because the so-called moderates on the Democratic side killed his nomination. Senators Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, Mark Kelly all voted against confirming David Weil to serve as the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division. His nomination failed, 47-53 procedural vote. Obviously, none of the Republicans are going to allow him for reasons we're going to make clear. But now, those Democrats have given us a situation where we can't even get someone who is acceptable under Obama. Now, why were they against him? Well, Weil was opposed by the US Chamber of Commerce, the International Franchise Association, Heritage Action for America, the National Taxpayers Union, the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and various others. This is back when he was serving in government under Obama. He advocated for stronger protections for temporary and gig workers in what he called the fissured workplace. His track record in the previous administration, and more recently, his criticism of Uber and other gig work giants earned him heated opposition, not only from Republicans and lobbyists and all of that, but also those centrists. And in fact, in particular, one of the things they had an issue with was he infuriated the restaurant industry with legal guidance that corporate entities such as McDonald's could be held accountable for labor violations at restaurants that are technically owned and operated by smaller companies known as franchisees. A tactic that would be designed to get them to exercise more oversight and responsibility for the franchisees. He wanted to protect people against things like wage theft and other abuses in the workplace. And thanks to, in this case, not only the Wonder Twins, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, but also Mark Kelly now, we're not gonna get him. We're gonna have to settle for someone that Uber and McDonald's are a little bit more comfortable with, Brett.
These are the ones that are super frustrating to me. I don't know, I've never had this thought before this discussion, but I probably should have by now. But like when it comes to unionizing Amazon and getting protections for gig workers domestically, like this is not an outsourcing issue. This is not, would not create outsourcing. That's probably why they're fighting so much about it. Because you need in a local distribution, you know, basically a logistics company like Amazon and a logistics company like Uber and Lyft, like those folks have to deliver you or your packages from somewhere near your neighborhood to your home. Mm-hmm. And that's why, and they exist because they got around the old way of doing that. And it's all about getting away old ways of doing that and lowering their bottom line. But we have to put a bar below which that line can't sink. And we have leverage. And people on the left side of the aisle have no excuse to deny that to us. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're the people in Congress who are voted in there. Like, I don't see any reason that temporary gig workers shouldn't be protected, because that is the future of a lot of employment. At the same time that people like Amazon are looking for ways to bypass key parts of that technologically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's on the other side, as you point out, it is going to be an increasing share in the future. And that is why they feel that the industry needs to be protected. And we're not going to go into all the statements, but Joe Manchin, like he said that for many West Virginia employees and business owners, his statements were problematic. Yeah, Uber drivers in West Virginia were just, they were just bombarding Joe Manchin with calls about this. They were really bothered with the idea that someone was going to be looking out for them. And apparently, by the way, there's reports that Sinema might have convinced the other two to vote in this way. So they're all bad, but she might be chief bad in this particular case.
Every time I hear a company complain about some kind of attempt to protect workers in this fashion, all I hear them do is admit they're not good at innovating. Mm-hmm. They're not smart enough. They're not good. They always say, oh, don't raise my taxes. Oh, don't do this. Don't do that. While I'm wildly successful and way richer than you.
Yeah.
I believe in them. And the same way they say, you know, you need to work your way up and pull yourself up by your bootstraps as a laborer. Well, listen, capitalist, big honcho at a big company, you need to innovate better so that you can overcome. I'm sorry, but like trying to make it so people can put food on their tables for their families.
Exactly. Doesn't seem like a high bar. Okay, with that said, we've got some wild stuff to get into, starting with this.
I knew I could never, no longer have a normal life knowing that babies were being systematically killed. I just saw this pain and it really impacted.
Okay, so there you are seeing a little bit of the thought process, the philosophy of an anti-abortion activist who has made news recently, understandably so. We want to give you a little bit more background on her before we spice this thing up. Take a look at this video.
At 23 years old, Lauren Handy is not your typical DC young adult. Instead of wanting to climb the corporate ladder, Lauren Handy is focused on saving lives.
I've had close to 500 saves from around the country.
Those saves are the lives of unborn babies who were almost aborted had Handy not encountered their mothers at abortion clinics. This year alone, Handy has saved at least 28 babies since Ash Wednesday.
There's quite a bit of spin on that video. But anyway, Lauren Handy is back in the news, not just for being profiled by, you know, an anti-abortion organization, but because five fetuses were found in her home. And this is coming about as a result of this ongoing development of the story where she and other anti-abortion activists are being indicted for forcing their way into an abortion clinic. But let's start off with the fetuses. I think understandably, The grisly discovery was made after the US Department of Justice announced federal charges. This is in relation to a 2020 incident. But anyway, they got a tip about a biohazard material at the home. And police have released few details of the discovery as of yesterday, stating only that the fetuses were collected by the DC office of the chief medical examiner and the investigation is ongoing. So when they saw this activist, Handy, outside of her home, they asked her what was going on. She said people freak out when they hear. The whole thing, Brett, just, I don't understand this world. I don't understand these activists. I am assuming, trying to place myself in their world, that they had had these fetuses for use in protests. I know that they historically like graphic imagery. That is not an understandable reason. I don't understand what other potential explanations there are. What do you make of all this?
I understand clinging to your beliefs and espousing them, but if you're at the point in your protest or anything for that matter, when you've got like five fetuses at your house, I think you've gone a little overboard.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And then you'll have the Catholic network be all around you saying, listen, God doesn't like killing babies. Skip that plague where he killed every firstborn baby in Egypt. Anyways, let's move on. She's really saving lives. She talks about it. She talks about stealing freedoms from women that she doesn't agree with. Like yeah. She's playing hockey, like she's Henrik Lundqvist saving goals. Like insane.
Absolutely insane. And along the way, by the way, as they're now facing these charges over like lying to clinics to force their way in, injuring a nurse while doing so, all the details are available. BuzzFeed had a great write up on this if you wanna know more, but they're now facing up to potentially, I'm sure they won't get it, but up to potentially 11 years for forcing their way in to try to barricade access to this. Again, they would pretend that this is about protecting life or whatever. No, this is about forcing their worldview on other women, trying to scare them either because of like potentially being filmed or literally being fearing for their own lives from exercising their rights. But I didn't want to just leave us on the bad news. I want to get to a little bit of good news and let you know that while a number of states, as we've profiled in many videos, are passing incredibly radical anti-abortion legislation, other states, blue states, are trying to set themselves up as sanctuaries for women's reproductive rights. For instance, on March 22nd, Gavin Newsom signed a bill that eliminated out-of-pocket costs for abortion as part of the state's efforts to increase accessibility to reproductive care. So that's California. In February, Vermont's House of Representatives approved a state constitutional amendment that would guarantee personal reproductive liberty. That's gonna go before voters in a referendum in the elections in November this year. Colorado on March 24th passed the Reproductive Health Equity Act, which would give people the right to choose whether to have an abortion or continue a pregnancy. It explicitly states that fetuses, fertilized eggs, and embryos do not have independent rights under Colorado law. Illinois also passing legislation as well. So this is important for people living in these states. It's important to protect against efforts to pass laws like we've seen in Missouri and Idaho and Texas and other states in these blue states. But also more and more women in these red states are going to need a place they can go to get expedited, affordable access to exercise their rights. And so this is not enough, by the way. This does not mean that the Democrats federally are off the hook. They don't need to do anything, or that people, activists, and elected representatives in these red states don't have to fight back against this. But at the very least, we have some places where people will still be able to exercise their rights that they've had since before they were born.
Good.
Yes. Okay, and we will see. Hopefully, you'll see more bills like this coming forward. We know that there's going to be an absolutely devastating couple of Supreme Court decisions in this area, potentially going as far as totally getting rid of Roe v. Wade in the future. This is at least some protection against this. And we will wait to see what ends up happening to this anti-abortion activist, whether the charges she was already facing or God only knows what might come from her having the fetuses. Anyway, with that said, we've got a few more minutes to get into one more thing. So let's jump into this video.
Thank you very much. Mr. Raise gaze for Trump. You don't look good.
He said you don't look good.
We did great with the gay population.
Okay, so I don't want to be the joke police or whatever. I wish that the right was more funny, Brett. Generally, when they try, it ends up like this. But like specifically asking for gay supporters of yours to identify themselves in a crowd I'm going to assume is largely straight, and then saying you don't look gay. That's a weird way to go, Brett. I don't. You're more of a comedian than me. What do you think?
It's like, well, I am. Want me to show you? Like,
yeah. What are you? What supposed do you want? To say like, to that?
It's just exactly it. It's just cringetopia. It is very obvious that everyone in a crowd behind him who supports him is just tokenized. It's proof that while they always have this defense, when you're like, listen, you guys are being racist, you guys are being homophobic, they're like, no, I just have other priorities. It's like, well, you just put a list together for me, what you think it makes someone look gay. And I'll show you that you're a bigot. You have prejudice. You're stereotyping people along lines. We all know exactly what he's going to say, exactly how he's going to list it, exactly how he's going to act it out. And this is an argument for more inclusivity and representation everywhere. So you can actually realize that, like, there's all kinds of people who are so-called straight who act all different kinds of way. Why wouldn't you just expect and accept that from people who are homosexual?
I don't.
But that's it. That's the tokenizing world they live in.
What you say? Like, I left my uniform at home. I don't. What do you?
Well, you're not dressed as a Native American or a firefighter or any of the other village people.
So I have no context. We know he loves them, by the way. He loves YMCA. Yeah, I don't. Look, the people laughing. Again, I get that it's a joke. I get it. My follow-up question though is it a joke? The question is, what do you joke about and what do you not joke about? Everybody chooses. Everybody thinks certain things are funny. What are you?
I couldn't be more against what you're saying right now.
You don't even know what I'm saying yet because you already cut me off before I made my point. My point is, who do you choose to target with your comedy? Do you disagree with that?
Yes.
Do you have a minute? What do you disagree?
Well, I just think that to think about it is what do you joke about and what don't you joke about is wrong. You just identify what's a more difficult thing to make the right joke about. Mm-hmm. My argument has to be that you can joke about anything. You just need to be funny enough. And there is no way that those folks and most people who are like, I'm gonna tell an AIDS joke right now or a cancer joke are funny enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, my follow-up to that would be, so you could try to joke about anything. Why would you go in with the mission to joke about AIDS?
Because you are looking to expose a truth.
Okay. I would agree with you, a high bar, I think, for that. Trump, I don't think exposing a truth, they're also lying. So we might disagree about the.
I would argue it's not a joke. I would argue it's not a joke that he's making. He's just saying what he thought at the time. And he thinks it's funny that gay people look so gay to him. Like, it's not a joke. It's just
I don't know. I mean, he's smiling and the other straight people in the audience laughed. I think that means they think it was a joke.
Yeah.
But again, sometimes jokes are founded in truth. He clearly has bigoted, biased views. But anyway, I want to make sure that we get to the truth is he said he did very well among the LGBTQ community. I just want to make sure that people know that that was not actually true. It was something like 81-14, depending on what poll you look at. And so anyway, it's just you can and should and will support whoever you want, including people who might be incredibly bigoted against your own community. That is totally your own right. Could they not at least try to be a little bit welcoming of the people who cross over against all odds? But they apparently don't feel that they need to. Anyway, with that said, we have no more time in our first hour. We do have more coming though on the other side of this break. So stick around, we'll be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.